Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Ship the Shore Radio. Radio. It's time for
Ready Sports Talk.
Good. I thought it was ending like four or five times, and it just didn't. It just kept going and going and going. Well, we're here. Welcome to another episode of another night of fun sports talk right here on the Dreaded Sports Talk Show on Ship to Shore Radio Network. I'm Evil Rob, and I'm sitting here with my good buddy Ken from Jersey, the trusty first mate. What's going on, Ken?
Oh, not much. Just watching my Rangers play right now. No score in the third period.
Yeah, I got that game on myself because, you know, can't not watch a good Ranger game, especially when, you know, you're sitting here in the studio and you can't have any volume. At least you can watch hockey and enjoy yourself a little bit. Yeah, unfortunately, the captain may or may not be able to be with us. He's not here right now. He's out pirating another unsuspected ship and trying to take them over just to bring in more booty to the payload over here. And hopefully he's getting some damn Miller Lite because I'm running a little dry. I don't know about you.
You can never have enough booty. That's my motto.
Ain't that the truth? And it doesn't matter. You do the bigger the better sometimes, you know? Well, we got a ton of stuff to talk about. The main topic tonight is going to be the head coaching fiasco that's going to be happening very soon in the National Football League. Because we all know that it seems like every year there's between 8 and 15 head coaches get fired or quit or resign, or they just change, teams just change head coaches, and it's going on and on and on, and it seems like it's getting to be a larger number every single year. And we're going to get into a lot more about that, but, you know, first things first, we got to get a little bit of opening comments going on right now. And my big little thing that's been going on so far, you know, we can't mention the hockey game, and you know, there's one thing that is sticking out this so far in this hockey season, and that is serious head injuries. I can't get over how many head injuries are going on or occurring in the NHL right now. It seems like somebody needs to step up and do something because, yes, the players are wearing helmets, but are they really up to par? You know, helmets in the NHL, in football and NASCAR and every other sport that wears a helmet, they're getting bigger and better and stronger and more protective, but hockey never seems to change. They're still wearing the same plastic, paper-thin helmets that they've been wearing for years. The only thing change that they did do was they started putting face masks on them. And, you know, they did, a few years back, require all players to wear helmets. So I guess that's a big step up because, you know, I'm sure you remember, Ken, as Craig McTavish was the last player of the NHL to not wear a helmet.
Not have to, because he was grandfathered in, yeah.
Right, because he was the only player at one point in time that was, like you said, he was grandfathered in. He was started before the date that he was required to wear it. So they just never forced him to wear it. And, you know, me and my friends growing up, we used to call him Captain Helmetless, just, you know, for posterity. But, you know, There's something that needs to be done, because when you lose a player like Sidney Crosby, who's probably the best player in the NHL right now, and, you know, he was out for close to three-quarters of a season between last year and this year, and he's already, he played for about a week, and he's out again, and they don't know what's going to happen. He's still going under, redoing all those concussion tests again. But, you know, that's the big key, but there's been so many players, something needs to be done. What do you think about that, Ken?
Definitely. You've just had the guy from Claude Giroux from the Flyers out with a concussion. There's too many headshots. The helmets could be a little better as far as protection, but they just skate so fast, they hit so hard at these helmets and the headshots. They have to make the penalties, I think, more severe for a headshot. Because some of these guys...
that's definitely...
Especially guys not looking. It's the same rule they put in football. You know, you get the 15-yard penalty now. If you have a receiver going across the middle and he's defenseless and you crush him, you got to have the same thing in hockey. There's too many hits well after a guy releases the puck, and he's not looking, and somebody comes flying in. Although, you know what re-aggravated Crosby's injury? He actually ran into his own teammate, Chris Kunitz. I saw it on the highlights. They weren't looking, and it actually collided pretty hard, and he hit the ice. It didn't appear that he smacked his head, but I think the force of hitting the ice and his neck snapping back, that's when the trouble started again.
Right, yeah, exactly. And, you know, and that's why I say the helmets are a big thing. And, I mean, I completely agree with what your point was with the hits. They need to do something with the hits. Now, you don't want them to go as far as the NFL has, because the NFL is really truly trying to make it the no-fun league. And I understand that there's people's careers are on the line here, and there's millions upon millions of dollars being risked every time they step on the field because, you know, of the players' salaries, and one hit could end their career, and they don't get paid anymore. So I do understand that, but you got to let the guys have some fun. But there does have to be a limit. And as, like you said, the players are getting bigger and stronger and faster than they ever were, whether it's because of drugs and HGH or whether it's just, you know, simple evolution. I don't know, but if you look back at the players from 20 years ago and you compare them to the size of the average player now, they're huge.
Yeah.
In all sports, not just hockey, not just football, but in all sports. I mean, look, think back to the 86 World Series Mets team. And you look at Darryl Strawberry, who was like the biggest guy on the team. And he looks like a toothpick now compared to a relief pitcher. I don't know what's going on with these athletes, but they're just getting huge. And, you know, something definitely needs to be done. But, you know, so what's on your mind to start this fun-filled hour and a half off with?
I'm just starting to get a little bit tired of the Penn State / Syracuse stuff, because it just seems to get more and more bizarre. Now I don't think you're ever going to find out what the true story is behind these cases, because they're changing stories. They're just coming up with excuses and discrediting the accusers. And now they're saying Mike McQuarrie's story wasn't actually what really happened. And then you have this I thought was funny. The lawyer for Sandusky had a press conference today, and he was kind of like challenging people, saying, if you believe, you know, my client is guilty of these, you know, 40 supposed attacks, he wants to have you call this phone number. Well, he gave out the wrong phone number. It was 1-800-REALITY. When in actuality, 1-800-REALITY is a gay sex line that advertises itself as the hottest place for XXX action. I'm on AOL. It's on the AOL News on the Huffington Post. The lawyer's name is Jerry Amendola. There's a video. You can watch him at the press conference giving out the wrong number. Of all the wrong numbers to give out.
Perfect. That is absolutely perfect. The only thing that would have been better was a BSDM post or something, you know?
And now you've got another lawsuit
going on.
The two accusers in the Syracuse case are suing Boeheim and the university for defamation of character for the remarks that Boeheim made that, I guess before he had all the facts, he said, well, they're a bunch of liars just looking to make some money. So now they got some high-profile attorney, and that's another court case that's going to be going on. This is just going to get deeper and deeper, and it's just never going to end.
Well, Boeheim never should have opened his mouth. He should have kept his yap shut. The only thing that he should have said when that whole thing first came out was that, I'm not making any comments about the situation until we find out all the details.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he should have done. And, you know, that lawsuit, I can honestly see, especially if, well, the only reason why there supposedly wasn't charges filed in that case was because the statute of limitations had expired.
Yeah.
Which, that's another BS deal that, you know, a child molester can get off, well, no pun intended, because the statute of limitations expires. You know, there's none on murder, but you can bang a 10-year-old kid and 20 years down the road, you know, you can still get away with it. That's wrong in my book right there. But, you know, Boeheim should have kept his mouth shut and just made a very simple one-line comment. Until all the details are, I will not make a comment until all the details are out.
And yeah, until he got
all the
facts.
This would be happening right now.
He should have had all the facts before he said anything.
Right. Instead, he opened his mouth and said a couple stupid things, and, you know, he's going to have to pay for it now, and he could be the next one to lose his job because of this, because Paterno lost his job because of the whole thing. You know, it's a different aspect of why, because Paterno was obviously more involved in the details of everything going on, knew more and, you know, whatever, covered it up. But Boeheim, you know, Syracuse is a very prestigious institution. And to have this kind of a suit go off or go against the college because of things that a coach says, you know, if it wasn't Boeheim, if he didn't have the record that he does, he would have been shit-canned already.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But it's like you said, I'm starting to get tired of it too, and, you know, I really don't even want to discuss it anymore because it just, the more I talk about it, the more it disgusts me because, you know, it's just such vile acts that are being talked about consistently, and hopefully this does something good and raises awareness with kids and with parents on what is right and what's wrong, and, you know, because if someone is taking advantage of these kids, even now in today's world, because that guy from the AAU basketball league, youth basketball, was accused earlier in the week. And, you know, it's just accusations coming out all over the place. So, obviously,
Penn State
something's
said
still
gonna
going on.
They're going to donate $500,000 from their bowl money to one of them foundations for awareness and, you know, just to make people more aware and get the word out. And, you know, they've had a fundraiser type thing there where they actually raised almost $500,000 on their own, and they're going to donate some of this bowl money to it. So the university's, it's a good start.
Yeah, it's a good start, but there's a long, long road ahead of them. So.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that this guy was still out on campus after all this stuff happened, that's the thing that I can't, you know, find any excuse for it. If there is no excuse, if they knew this guy was doing this, it should have been brought to light. But the fact that they knew he was doing this and still allowed him to hang around and use the campus facilities, that goes on the whole Penn State faculty, from Paterno to the president to everybody. That one person should have just said, listen, this guy can't be here. They actually asked a couple of the players, the younger players, who kind of didn't even really know who he was, and they asked him what they thought about this guy, and they go, he's just like some creepy old guy that hangs around the locker room.
You wonder why.
Yeah.
You know, I'm surprised I haven't actually heard a joke that starts off with Jerry Sandusky, a Catholic priest, and Michael Jackson walk into a bar.
There was a joke on South Park where it goes, yeah, and Joe Paterno doesn't walk into a police station.
Yeah. I saw that. That was a funny clip. I laughed my ass off at that one. That whole episode was pretty good. It was. I don't know, but let's move on. Well, that just, and I can't even figure out a way to say this without it sounding bad. I was about to say, let's move off the children.
I am rooting for Penn State in their bowl game, though, because they're playing the University of Houston. And I want to see them just shut them down and crush them up like a piece of paper.
Well, they're playing Houston. That doesn't even deserve to be in a bowl game, so.
Yeah, we spoke about this last week, how I got into it on the chat boards with these people saying that they should be playing LSU, not Alabama. We're undefeated. We should be in this championship game. And then they proceed to go out and get destroyed by Southern Mississippi.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you're getting destroyed by Southern Mississippi, you don't deserve to be anywhere.
I don't like teams that do what this coach does. This kid is in the games against the Georgia States and the low competition they play till the end of the fourth. He's finished games just to run up his stats. I'm so glad that the Heisman Committee, when they vote and have like the five finalists come to New York, that guy was nowhere near, and being considered for anything in that voting. That was such a sham, you know, that he should be even in the Heisman consideration after the numbers he put up against the competition he did at the time of the games that he, you know, it's just, that was just, I believe what comes around goes around, and this kid's going to be gone, and Houston's going to play some of these teams again, and they're going to get the same treatment they gave, you know, people will be running scores up on them.
Yeah, exactly, and you know, Griffin was almost the same way. Baylor did a lot of the same stuff with him, running up scores at the end of the game and just launching passes when the games were completely out of reach already, just to build up his thing. And that's one of the reasons why I didn't think he deserved the Heisman. But he did win, and it wasn't convincing. It was a pretty close vote between him and Andrew Luck, which, you know, kind of surprised me how close it was. I think it was only like 30 or 40 points that the difference was.
But at least like with Luck, he was, when they got in games that were out of hand. Plus, they played a tougher schedule. And they would take the guy. You don't run the score up. You're not going to win any other voters over in the polls by running up scores especially against chump teams like they were playing.
Right.
Throwing the ball up, you know, 52-3, and he's still throwing passes, you know, on first down in the fourth quarter.
Right. Yeah, when you're up by that much against, you know, Bob University, and you can't just run the clock out and just hand the ball off, or even, you know, at that point in time, if you're up 50 points in the fourth quarter, just take a knee.
Yeah.
You know, take a knee for three downs and kick the ball, because what's the point? You know, give the other team a little bit of semblance of a hope, and yeah, okay, if they score 30 points, then start playing again, but... You know, running the score up is something that was old days in college football when it was, the voters did look at how bad you beat certain teams. You know, because if you couldn't beat Bob University by more than 30, you weren't considered as good as someone that could. And then, you know, if you got Texas and Oklahoma sitting there fighting, then they look at the score and say, okay, what did they do against Alcorn State? They both played Alcorn State. Texas won by 47. Oklahoma won by 10. So Texas is obviously a better team. But those days they're quickly becoming over because of, you know, just what I would say, just fights on the field, because the players are just getting – no one wants to get beat that bad. And it's just rude and obnoxious for the coaches to come out and have these players just almost humiliate the other team by doing that. And it's hopefully, it's been going by the wayside, and hopefully that trend continues, because I just don't like to see it.
Yeah.
All right. So what else do we have? What's on the captain sent us a big-ass list here of things he wants us to go over this week. I'd say we just say, I say we say screw his list and just talk about what we want out of it's our boat now, God damn it. Oh, God, I'm missing my Miller Lite. I'm stuck with Diet Coke tonight. Oh, that's what I do have rum in the house, though. Yes. I might have to do that. But, okay, so we'll move on to the whole coaching carousel, the NFL coaching blitz that's going on now. And so far we've already lost three coaches. We lost Del Rio in Jacksonville, Todd Haley in Kansas City, and Tony Sperano from Miami. Now, we all saw Del Rio and Sperano going before the season started. You had to be blind and deaf and dumb not to see the fact that those two were going to get fired if they didn't pull out a playoff run this year. But Todd Haley, I don't know about you, that one surprised me because he was the coach of the year last year.
That was a little bit of a surprise because of the injuries they've had this year. I figured he was at least safe for another year. I mean, they lost their best running back. They lost their guy Barry from the secondary, the best defensive back. They've had quarterbacks going down and playing with, I mean, Tyler Palko probably wouldn't make our varsity team here in town. I was the other Sperano. You knew he was going. They were offering his job around. Was it last year? Well, he was still on the contract, and they were going around talking to. I think it was Bill Cowher. They just, you know, they didn't handle that right either. The guy's still there on the contract, and they're out trying to get some. You know, publicly
and
going
publicly
out and whining and dining Bill Cowher. Well, he's still there. On the, they didn't fire him, but he's still there. Yeah, Del Rio knew what was going because they just keep floundering around. I don't know whose decision that was with the quarterback situation, letting you know Garrard go and just basically they threw the whole season away, get this kid some experience, Gabbard. It's the Jones Crew show.
Well,
he does everything.
But the biggest problem in Jacksonville, I don't think it's Del Rio. The biggest problem in Jacksonville is they got nobody on that team besides Maurice Jones-Drew. And how much can you do when the only decent skilled player you have is your one running back? There's no dead set great go-to receivers.
There's no receivers.
You know, Mercedes Lewis is not a end-all, be-all tight end. The defense is nothing spectacular in general as a whole. Special teams aren't that good. I don't know if that's something you
if
can
you're
going
to throw the rookie quarterback
because
to the Wolves and let him play, you got to get him receivers. If he has nobody to throw to, he's Jones-Drew has been one of his best receivers over the last few games. He's had three receiving touchdowns in the last two games.
Yep. Yeah, three receiving touchdowns and three rushing touchdowns in the last two games.
And
they
need
and
to
actually
a few more,
really,
few more this week.
this week they looked really, really good. Last week they looked good for the first half, and then, you know, against San Diego last week they just got destroyed the second half. It's like they didn't even want to come out the locker room for some reason. But it's, you know, Del Rio, like I said, I saw going, Todd Haley, that's a shock because, well, I mean, you mentioned it before, the injuries, the key injuries. When Matt Cassel, which, you know, Matt Cassel is not, you know, he's not Peyton Manning or Tom Brady, but he's still a solid starting quarterback for an NFL team.
Yeah.
You lose him and you lose Jamaal Charles, who is one of the top five running backs in football. You know, those two players go down the first few weeks of the season, you can't expect anybody to do to be the playoff contender. So there had to be something going on behind closed doors as a reason why Haley is not there anymore.
Yeah.
Had to be something. There's something that hasn't been mentioned. I haven't had time to really look into that one, but there has to be something else. I don't know, maybe he was caught banging the team owner's daughter or something. I don't know what was going on, but something is just, there's something fishy in Kansas City right now, and hopefully by next week we'll figure out what it is. But, ooh, that's a strong one. Ooh, boy. Hey, wow. Hello. I figure since the captain's out here, someone has to drink the rum, you know? But, okay, so who do you think is next to go in the NFL? Because there's a bunch of coaches that are just not doing too well. You got Andy Reid with Philadelphia. We know that whole debacle is going on. Chan Gailey with his collapse in Buffalo. You know, Jason Garrett,
he may be on the hot seat the most because Jerry Jones hasn't put up with a lot of losing, and especially you know, when you're icing your own kicker 1 week. They have the talent. They don't have a lot of injuries. I mean, they lost DeMarco Murray this week, but they still got, you know, Felix Jones. They've got a good team, and they're not doing it. I think Andy Reid survives one more year. Morris and Tampa could be in a little bit of trouble because they've not only been losing, they've been getting just beat up. Jacksonville.
Yeah, and they were supposed to be the upcoming team because what's his name? I can't even remember the guy's name because he's been so out of whack. The quarterback, Johnson, right?
Freeman.
Freeman. Josh Freeman. Yeah, he was supposed to be like the next great hope of quarterbacks coming up in the NFL, and this year he just hasn't done anything. And
that's another team.
Plus, they had the injury to
LeGarrette
Blount, and what's that?
That's another team with not a lot of top-notch receivers either. They need to get the guy some help. Blount's a good running back, but the receiving team is a lot left to be desired. You need to get these guys at least play a season, get them a good receiver. If you don't have anybody to throw to, if guys aren't open, you're not going to excel either. You can't make the guys get open. If they're open and you're not hitting them with the passes or you're throwing the picks, then it's your fault. But if you have guys that aren't open.
Right.
But they seem to have gone in the tank for him. I don't know. You know, he's of all the guys we mentioned, he's probably the one in the most trouble. I got to see what happens with San Diego if they make a late run.
Yeah, Norv Turner is always in the hot seat.
That division is so bad that he actually still has a chance to make the playoffs. But I think it's getting beyond the point where he makes the late season comeback and he loses in the first round. I think he's got to do some winning in the playoffs, and I don't know if they can do that.
Right. Now, there's two more names on this list that I'm, like, really torn about because you got Leslie Frazier of Minnesota who, you know, they are another team that they did the Donovan McNabb experiment and that failed miserably. And now they got Christian Ponder and this kid Webb that's coming through and actually putting points on the board, but obviously their defense isn't going strong. And then you got Steve Spagnuolo in St. Louis that, you know, his defense is playing really well, but they can't get anything going on offense.
They also have new owners coming in.
I'm not... What's that, Ken?
There's new owners coming in. They just mentioned it last night on the game, and you don't know when you get new people running the team. You know, they may keep him, or they may decide to bring in their own personnel. That's
right.
Another team, though. You got a good rookie quarterback. He's not Bradford's not bad, but they have no receivers. I was watching that game last night. I didn't recognize any of those names. And a good test to that is you would know it with fantasy football. Nobody in any of the leagues I play in has any St. Louis wide receivers.
No, they really don't. I didn't. It's like St. Louis, Tampa Bay, Jacksonville. And, I mean, the only team that has no solid receiver that's doing anything right now is Tennessee.
Yeah.
You know, because they lost, Kenny Britt for the season.
And he was red hot.
And after that, there's nobody. But, you know, I'm hoping Spagnuolo keeps his job because I like the guy. He did a great job as a defensive coordinator with the Giants. And, you know, I'm kind of hoping in one hand that he keeps his job because, you know, I like the guy. But at the same time, I'm hoping he gets canned and then in the Giants head coaching spot opens up and he can move into a prominent spot where he belonged in the first place. Where,
yeah.
You know, I said this a while ago, what the Giants should have done with Spagnuolo is the biggest bonehead decision that they've made in years. And they've been making some good decisions, good personnel decisions. But they should have said to Spagnuolo, look, Coughlin is still our head coach. I know you want the spot. You're guaranteed to be the next head coach of this team. Here's the head coach paycheck. Just stick it out for a few more years until Coughlin goes bye-bye. And I think he would have stayed with that.
Yeah.
You know, to have no responsibility except what he was already doing. I mean, he had one of the best defenses in football. And now the Giants, their defense looks like a damn sieve except for Pierre Paul.
Yeah. They've had two games where they've come back, tied it or went ahead, and they let the Packers, just move downfield like they weren't even there. They were just lucky that the field goal was blocked this week. Otherwise, that would have went to overtime, and who knows what would have happened. Just keep letting teams.
Now, what's your thought on Tom Coughlin? Do you think he will stay, or do you think he's?
I think it's going to depend on what happens these last three games. If they don't make the playoffs, I think he might be gone. Too many late season collapses. They run the table the first, six, seven, eight games, and they go in the tank for the last eight games, and they have to scramble to make the playoffs. If they make the playoffs and make a nice little run in the playoffs, which is all up to the defense, because the offense is coming around, but the defense is just, you can't let teams move down the field with no timeouts and less than 50 seconds left and get in position for field goals and touchdowns.
Right, and it happened 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
To where, last week it was Green Bay, and you can't take anything away from the Giants defense for letting Green Bay do it, because Aaron Rodgers is just, he's on fire right now. That whole Green Bay offense is almost unstoppable. And Jordy Nelson made one hell of a catch to keep that drive going.
Yeah.
If he didn't make that spinning drop kick, Tai Chi, Jean-Claude Van Damme catch in the sideline, that drive stalled. And the Giants won that game. But it didn't happen. Or actually, that game would have gone to overtime, I believe. But last week, they did the same thing. They let Dallas go, and Dallas drove down the field, and if it wasn't for, once again, the same thing happened with Dan Bailey, where he kicks the game-winning field goal. This was a game-time field goal to put it in overtime, and there was a timeout call. This time, at least, it was by the opposite coach, the opposing coach. And the only reason why that happened is because Jason Garrett did not have any timeouts left, so he couldn't.
That was.
I was watching the game with a buddy of mine who's a diehard Cowboys fan. And the first thing he said was, "Thank God we have no timeouts left. Jason Garrett can't call one. It's the wrong time." And I just laughed my ass off at that. But it's the truth.
They still never came up with a legitimate excuse on why he did that. They came up with something that one of the assistant coaches thought the play clock was running down, and they were going to be called for a penalty. When in reality, the play clock wasn't even close to running down. They still had 10 seconds left.
6 seconds left on the clock.
Yeah.
I went over that whole last week, and, just like I said last week, it was a complete, the last 30 seconds of that drive last week for Garrett was a clusterfuck of errors, and there's no other way to put it. It was like five errors all in one time. It looked very similar to this week with the Bears. How with Marion Barber, with his, two big goofs to lose that game.
Yeah.
First of all, how do you go out when your entire job at that point in time is you got two jobs. Hold on to the ball and don't go out of bounds.
And he didn't do either.
He went out of bounds and then he lost the ball.
It is big opportunity. His big opportunity to showcase himself with Forte out. This is his opportunity and didn't do it.
the good thing for him is they really have nobody else on that depth chart that has the skill set that Barber has. Barber is the only one left on that team that has any kind of starting experience in the NFL.
Yeah, there's nobody else.
So, and with no quarterback, Caleb Haney is not a guy you're going to sit there and say, "Oh, wow, I want Caleb Haney on my team. If we're going to win a Super Bowl, we can't do it without Caleb Haney." No, you're not going to hear that out of anybody.
I'm surprised they didn't have anybody a little better in the backup spot. He's really stretching it.
Well, I mean, that's a big trend because there's such a disparity in the NFL with quarterbacks going from your starting quarterback. How many teams? I mean, look at the Colts.
Yeah.
Who would have thought that the Colts would be over at this point in the season just because Peyton Manning isn't there? You know, you want to talk about disparity, but I mean the same thing. Tom Brady goes down. What happens? Aaron Rodgers goes down. Drew Brees goes down. Eli Manning goes down. I mean, Roethlisberger may not play this week, and what's going to happen with him out of that lineup? Not saying that he's, you know, the end-all, be-all quarterbacks, but, you know, he has won two Super Bowls. He knows how to win. Speaking of knowing how to win, I know we're varying off this whole coaching concept, but Tim Tebow did it again. I have to bring it up because we were just talking about the Bears. You know, what is it about the fourth quarter? Or not even the fourth quarter, the last 5 minutes of the game that changes? Are the defenses playing different against them? I was trying to analyze to see what was going on with this game, and it didn't look like anything was different except the guy actually said, it's like he just woke up. Like the alarm clock went off with 5 minutes and something seconds left, and he said, okay, it's time to play now.
I still want to see them against a better team, though. He's been doing a lot of stuff against, you know, just subpar. I mean, the Bears.
Bears defense is pretty good. They're like third. Like, you know, I don't know about what they're actually ranked in the NFL, but in fantasy, they're like the third or fourth best defense points-wise. They're creating the turnovers. They're running the kicks back. They're doing a bunch of, I mean, granted, that's not defense, but, you know, they're getting on the quarterback. They're doing their job. The Bears have a solid defense. And the Bears, before Cutler went down, were a solid team. They were competing. They were probably going to take the number one wild card spot. So the Bears are a solid team. And the Patriots, the thing with the Patriots is, yes, they're a good team. Yes, they can put the points on the board, but their defense is horrible.
It's awful, yeah.
Yeah, so everyone's saying, oh, what about the Patriots? You know, is he going to be able to do it against the Patriots? Well, chances are, yes. I don't know if he'll be in position to do that because he might be down by 30 points.
Yeah, they don't have the firepower to keep up.
Well, you know, everyone said that too, and then look what he did against Minnesota. Oh, he can't win a shootout. He, you know, if anyone team scores over 20 points, he can't do anything. Well, he put up over 30, was it 37 against Minnesota, which their defense is in, but still.
And they've given
the
second most points in the league, actually. The Colts have the most. They give up like 382. I was checking that out. That's the only reason why I noticed is because I got Drew Brees going against the Viking defense this week in my championship round.
Oh, nice. That's a nice matchup to have right there.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's get back onto the coaching. We can talk more about the whole Tebow deal later because I'm sure the captain, if he said he's going to be here, he's expecting to be done around 10. You know, if not, he said he's not done by 10, he's just going to blow the next ship up and just come in anyway. So hopefully he'll be back, and I'm sure he has something to say about Tebow. I'm positive on that fact. But who do you think would be, like, the next coaches, who's really definitely on the hot seat? It's make the playoffs or you're done, or, you know, win your last couple of games that shows that the team has some heart or you're done.
Probably
give me
North
two
Turner.
Coaches that you think are really, really, really on that hot seat.
Probably Coughlin and North Turner.
Yeah, I definitely have to agree. If anybody else was put in there, I would have to say Shanahan over in Washington. He's another one that, you know, the Redskins looked really good to start the season, and they've just faltered and faltered and faltered and faltered, even though Rex Grossman had a good game against New England, but like we just said, New England's defense is pretty porous, so that's really not saying much.
Awful. Yeah, because the Colts scored, I got 430 yards in offense against the Patriots the week before. With the third-string quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Yeah. Well, it wasn't only a third-string quarterback. It was Orlovsky, who has yet to win a start in his NFL career, and was 0-7 on Detroit's 0-16 season. And they made him look like Joe freaking Montana.
Yeah.
So that defense. It's going to be interesting to see what Tebow can do, because it's really going to be a test for him this week. But like I said, I got to keep staying off that whole Tebow thing. I keep wanting to go back there for some reason. Okay, now we know who's on the hot seat now for this year. Think about next year. Teams that have had subpar seasons this year because of one injury or another or whatever the case may be, one big major setback. Who next year, who do you see, like, or make or break season for them next year?
Probably Pete Carroll, because he's been there for a while. He's had a chance to get the players he wants, and they haven't really had any major injuries this year. And again, they've been a weak division, and they're struggling to make the playoffs. I'd say they'll probably give him another shot next year, but if next year's a failure, that's probably be it for him. He'll be back in college again.
Yeah, see, I agree with that 100%, and I'm looking at Chan Gailey. I think they'll keep him this year, just because, you know, they've had some major injuries. When you lose arguably the best running back in football this year in Fred Jackson, he goes out for an injury, and that kind of spearheads a downturn. You know, he's had a couple problems. He's had a bunch of receivers in and out all year long. He's kind of shuffled. You know, when C.J. Spiller is lining up as a wideout, you know you're having receiver issues. So, you know, I think he is one coach that's going to stay this year that will keep his job, but next year, barring, once again, major injuries, he's got to show something. He's got to show that they can put together a whole season, because, you know, he came on last year and spearheaded Buffalo to a great end of the season. They started the season on fire, and now they've kind of lost their steam, and they had me believing. I admit it. I said, you know, Buffalo will make this playoffs, and I got to, you know, eat crow on that one. You know, no KY, no reach around on that one for me. So. But now, one thing we haven't mentioned, and what nobody mentioned, is the coaches that are straight out safe. The guys that are actually doing a hell of a job. And the first two on my list are the Harbaugh brothers. You know, what they've done in San Fran is next to remarkable. By taking basically no personnel changes on the field and taking a team that didn't make the playoffs last year to a division winner, handedly a division winner, is nothing short of remarkable. The third one that I look at is Mike McCarthy, because, you know, I'm sorry, but you cannot argue with how many straight wins is it now? Something like 19 straight wins he's had, including the playoffs last year?
Yeah. His job is safe.
Yeah, there's no way. He could lose every game, including the first round of playoffs, and nothing would happen to him. They'd be like, oh, well. You know. Oops, we'll just have to do it again next year. You know, is there anybody else on that list that you think definitely just will not be going anywhere?
Oh, Belichick. I would have thought maybe Kubiak was a little on the hot seat, but this season is going to save his job. Same thing with Marvin Lewis. They struggled for a while. They came around this year.
Right.
Could have been shaky.
Yeah, Kubiak and Lewis, they were two that were on. This was their make-or-break season. They made it big time, because no one expected Cincinnati to be competing for a division title, let alone a playoff spot. And Houston, what they're doing right now is just shy of remarkable with, you know, Yates in the quarterback, and you lose Matt Schaub. You've had Arian Foster out for a few games. They've had Andre Johnson out for most of the season.
A lot of the season, yeah.
And they're still winning games. Their defense is absolutely remarkable, and I think hasn't Williams been out for part of the season too?
Mario Williams has gone. They lost him a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. So and the defense hasn't skipped a beat. This team just keeps on winning. Now, are they going to continue to be able to do that come playoff time? Who knows? But, you know, putting up the record that they have and continuing to win, especially with, you know, Yates, that game against Cincinnati, that was one of the best finishes of a game I've seen in a long time. You know, he drove down and no one gave him credit. Going in, oh, it's Yates. And just like Andy Dalton, no one gave him credit. But,
yeah,
you know, these are two young quarterbacks that are playing really well. And I think, you know, I'm definitely, I said it a while ago, and I'll say it again, I'm a believer in Andy Dalton. Because this kid has done it. You know, and everyone says, oh, well, it's only because of A.J. Green. He's only good because of A.J. Green, another rookie. Well, the couple of weeks that A.J. Green was out, he still did it.
Yeah, he missed a few weeks.
Right. So and Dalton was still really good. He was still on top of everything. So, you know, that kid's good. And Yates, I mean, I don't know, who knows if he's going to be able to start next year, because hopefully for the Texans that Shaw will be back.
They but also signed Jeff Garcia and who are they signing?
Jake Delhomme.
Delhomme. They're on the bench behind him, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, that cracked me up. When I saw they signed Jeff Garcia, I'm like...
He's been out for a while.
That guy cracks me up because if you look at his face when he's not wearing a helmet, tell me he does not look like the guy from RoboCop. After he goes through the surgery and he takes off his helmet and he's looking in the mirror and you see his face for the first time, I'm like, Jeff Garcia!
I don't even know when the last time that guy played. You know, I guess they didn't expect this guy to play so good, but he's doing a good job. Owen Daniels had 100 yards receiving. You know, other guys are with Andre Johnson. That guys are stepping up, and
right.
Arian Foster had probably his worst game in a long time this past week, but they still found they got that other tight end, Joel Dreesen. Guy's got 7 touchdowns now. He doesn't put up any yards during the game. Doesn't do a whole lot during the game, but when they get in the red zone, especially inside the 10, the guy catches touchdowns.
Yeah, he's unstoppable. He's like Gronkowski in New England. You know, that kid, he just set the record for tight ends or touchdowns by a tight end. It's what that kid's doing is incredible.
That's why I picked up Dreesen this week for my last week of fantasy, my championship round. And I think he's a little better than Dustin Keller.
Well, yeah, so are most people.
Especially they're playing Carolina at home. Cam Newton's having a great season. The defense isn't very good.
Right. Yeah. Now, okay, moving off the whole coach thing. Who do you think is the MVP for the Denver Broncos? Is it Tim Tebow, or is it Matt Prater?
Probably the kicker. The kicker's the one who wins all these games. I mean, I know Tebow's been bringing him back and putting him in position, but he hasn't, like this past week, he hasn't put him in great position. The guy had to kick, a 59-yard field goal? It wasn't like he got him down.
Yeah, 59 and a 51-yard field goal.
Yeah.
59 to tie and a 51 in overtime.
He actually he hit one, he showed it on the... one of the replays in pregames. Now, in pregames, you got nobody charging at you. It's more of a relaxed environment, but he hit one from 70 yards in pregame.
I know. I saw that. And I mean, granted, it was off a tee. There was no snap. There was no timing issues or anything, but still. And that thing went through. That could have gone from
spare. 80. Yeah.
And even that 59-yard kick. They showed the replay of it, and that thing could have gone from 70. It was halfway up the goalpost. and it was right down the middle. You know, that's a toss-up for me because without Tebow, Prater wouldn't have a chance to win the games, to be in that position to kick these field goals. And without Prater, Tebow would not be 6-1.
Yeah. They've also got a lot of help from a guy you don't doesn't get the notoriety, but the running game has been pretty good. Willis McGahee has been he's had a couple 100-yard games. He's had a couple really good games.
Oh, McGahee has been. I
wouldn't say
the
MVP, but he's a big part of the success. He's had some really good games. Everybody kind of wrote him off.
He's been a surprise because he was pretty much run out
of Baltimore.
And Baltimore. And, you know, everyone said his career is over. Oh, he's going to Denver, and, you know, he's just going to die in Denver. Well, he's had a resurgence.
Yeah.
So it's, that's a very good point because, you know, without McGahee, would the Broncos even be doing what they're doing? Because, what was it, how many games did Tebow have, you know, what, like, 80 passing yards?
80 yards passing. I still think they should make, not now, but you work on this in the offseason, make this guy a running back. He's got the size.
He's not big enough. He doesn't have the size to be a running back. Because even if you look at the smaller running backs that are good, that's like Darren Sproles and Maurice Jones-Drew that are really good, their legs are tree trunks.
Yeah.
Maurice Jones-Drew, it's like I was, you know, I got a 60-inch television, and I swear to God, his legs took up 45 of those inches. You know, and did you see that one shot during the San Diego game when he was running on the sideline, and he just, I forget who the linebacker was, but he just came over and just plowed him. Jones-Drew just stood there and laughed, and the linebacker, who was a big dude, it was probably the player on the San Diego defense, just went flying. And it's like, that's the stature this little guy has. He's a monster. And, you know, I would have to say right now, as much as it kills me, and I know he won't get it, he should be the MVP of the league. Because without him, that team would be just like the Colts, and they'd be winless.
Yeah. Here's Tebow. He's 6'3", 236. That's his height and weight.
That's Tebow?
Yeah.
Wow, he looks so damn tiny on TV. Maybe it's because he's too busy, praising Jesus or whatever.
He's always down on one knee saying a prayer, so he looks shorter when he's bent over.
Yeah, that's true. You know, the one thing that I do have to say about Tebow is that I was very impressed that the first thing out of his mouth was, I would like to thank my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ for giving me the opportunity to play this game. He did not say that for the first time all season in his post-game interview.
I think people have
been quite
mentioning that. Not getting on him, but I've seen that in a couple of the, like the chat rooms and stuff, and people are like, this, you know, you don't have to thank God for everything you do. And maybe he got back to him.
Yeah.
Because that's wear on you. You know, if you're religious, that's great. You know, but every time you complete a pass, you don't need to sit down and say a prayer, you know. That's
exactly
what you're supposed to do.
I'm not a religious person, but I don't knock anyone that is. If you believe in something, you believe in. That's great. That's what your life is about. Then, you know, absolutely 100% perfect for you. It's not my thing. If it's your thing, I don't care. But it's like, I don't want to go to a concert. I don't want to go to a Bruce Springsteen concert and hear him preaching about politics.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to go to a football game and hear Tebow preaching about religion. I'm going there to watch a football game, not to go to church. I watch the NFL because I don't want to go to church.
Here's the team stats for Denver. They're I don't know how to figure this out, but they're 23rd overall in offense. They're first in the league in rushing, and they're 31st in the league in passing. Wouldn't it make sense if you were 31st and first? I wonder what kind of formula they figure out to make them 23rd overall. If they're best, they should be like 15 or 16 somewhere. When I make, I don't know how, like 23rd. I don't get that.
Well, how many? What's their total rushing yards, and what's how close
well,
is everybody
they get,
else?
The average is, they average 156 a game rushing and 160 passing.
So they're averaging only 4 rushing yards less than their passing per game. That's great. But they're winning. And like I said last week, the only stat that matters from the end of the season is how large that number is underneath the W column of the standings. That's the only number that matters. It doesn't matter whether you beat the Packers, the Steelers, the Patriots, and the Cowboys, and lost to, you know, the Seahawks, the Rams, the Colts, and the Jaguars. As long as you get in that playoffs, you win that division, you're golden. And since Tebow's taking that team over, you know, they went from the basement to the penthouse in 7 weeks.
Their last 3 games are the Patriots, Buffalo, and Kansas City.
So he should go probably 2-3 in those games. I think he's going to lose the Patriots game just because I think Tom Brady is going to sit there and say, you know what, I've had enough of this Tebow shit.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a statement. And I think Tom Brady is, and Wes Welker and Gronkowski, all 3 of them are going to go absolutely nuts this week.
The Buffalo game is at Buffalo. I wouldn't be shocked if
Buffalo
won, but the Kansas City game is at home. And at that point, on New Year's Day, Kansas City, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, isn't going to care. They just want to keep that game moving, keep the clock going, and get home and get the season over with. I could definitely think.
Right.
I definitely think they'll lose to the Patriots. Buffalo, I don't know. Buffalo still throws a good game in every once in a while. It's on the road. Plus, you never know what kind of weather you're going to get in Buffalo either that time of year.
Yeah, but Denver's used to playing in the same weather.
That's true.
So,
yeah.
You can't throw the weather factor in there because, you know, Mile High Stadium. Denver's actually used to playing in worse weather because with the thin air up mile high up, it's a lot harder to play there in cold than it is in Buffalo. So the Buffalo game's a toss-up. I think Denver will pull that one out. The Patriots, like I said, I think they're just going to go nuts and say, you know what, this is a statement game. We're going to shut the Tebow people up. And I guarantee you, if the Patriots blow out Denver, the media is going to start ripping Tebow to shreds again.
Yeah, I think also it'll take a 2-3 game losing streak, and they'll be back.
I think it's going to take one loss. It's going to take one loss to a team like the Patriots that have a great offense and no defense. That are just they're a media darling. The Patriots are literally a media darling. And it's going to take a loss to a team like the Patriots, and the Boo Birds will be out throughout the media nationwide yet again. There's no doubt in my mind that's going to happen. You know, I hope I'm wrong because, you know, Tom Brady hasn't gone 6-1 in his last 7 games.
Here's the passing leaders per game since he took over as starter. In the Miami game, it was Matt Moore, then it was Stafford, Carson Palmer, Castles, Sanchez, Rivers, Ponder. The last game against the Bears was the first game that he started. He was actually the passing leader. He had 236 yards. He's actually leading rusher once. And look at these games from McGahee here. 101 yards. Well, 52, 103, 125, 76, 163, 111. That's another big factor. Like we said, that's...
McGahee has been a big deal. So, you know, it's almost... a three-way toss-up on that MVP because, you know, throwing in McGinnity was a great call on your part because, you know, he has been a city factor, especially when you have a quarterback that's not throwing for, you know, 250, 300 yards a game. To have McGinnity actually coming up and showing up for a change. And speaking of showing up for a change, I think we have a special guest here with us now.
You're listening to Ship the Shore Radio with Captain Frank and Dredd. Thanks for listening to Dreaded Sports Talk on the Dreaded Sports Talk Network.
Everyone, the captain has arrived. Hey,
hello, captain.
What's up, captain? So did you bring us the booty or did you bring us Miller Lite or both?
No, man. What's inside the sack you don't get to next week.
Oh, that's no fun.
Damn. So, you know, I guess just got to just jump right in and say right off the bat that there's some things that are really on my mind, but we'll start off with this big thing. Dallas. What in the world is wrong with Dallas? I think part of the problem is their defense. Another part of the problem is Jason Garrett does not, under any circumstance, trust Tony Romo. And right now, while the defensive players are trying to adjust to this system that seems to be as thick as Mike Martz's offense, they need to allow Romo to try and win some games, not give him plays to keep them from losing the game. I'm just wondering how you guys weigh in on that one.
I think the defense is part of the problem, too. The secondary is bad. Teams move pretty much at will against them. And they have a good pass rush with DeMarcus Ware, and they put pressure on the quarterback, but they just don't have anybody that can cover anybody.
Well, I look at it as the biggest problem is not Jason Garrett not trusting Tony Romo. I look at it as Jason Garrett is not trusting Jason Garrett. And when you're the head coach and you're not trusting your own decisions, you're second-guessing yourself the entire time, it creates a huge problem for your team because they don't know what direction to go in. If you're saying, you know, okay, spike the ball, no, timeout. Or let's kick the field goal. No, let's not kick the field goal. Let's do this, let's do that. You got to be decisive as a head coach in the National Football League. And right now he's not. It's almost like he's playing scared for his job.
He probably is. With respect of Jerry Jones behind him like that, you just never know. But that does hold some validity that perhaps he is second-guessing himself and worry about his job as opposed to what to just going out and coaching. He should probably take the same tack that he did as a quarterback and just go out and play. He sucked as a quarterback, but still he went out and played. Because I remember distinctly Jason Garrett, when they finally let him in, because in Dallas, they always call for the backup. And when he finally got his chance, he said, oh, what the hell? What do I have to lose? And he played loose and fancy-free and won a few games, and he had his time. But maybe he should coach the same way. I don't know exactly what's wrong with Dallas, but indeed something is wrong, which seems to happen every year. Dallas seems to always fade in December. Can anyone figure out why? I don't know. I mean, they're all making a lot of money. I know there's no snow in Dallas. Maybe they just want to run home someplace for Christmas and catch snow somewhere. I don't know, but something's wrong down in Texas. And it's not with...
Yes.
I just don't think it's the college programs. It's the marquee team, which probably is no longer the marquee team. I think the Houston Texans have something to say about that these days. And did anyone happen to mention that? And I'm going to throw this in real fast. Wade Phillips is one of the primary reasons that the Texans are playing so well, because he is now an defensive coordinator and he really has a scheme that complements their offense, which allows Gary Kubiak to call things a lot differently.
We have not talked about that yet, but that's a great point because, you know, there are certain – what Wade Phillips has done with the Texans kind of reminds me of what Buddy Ryan used to do, where he was really not a good head coach, but you put him in that defensive coordinator spot, and he was incredible. His defense was next to unstoppable, but, you know, he goes to a head coaching position, and there's nothing there anymore. It's like he lost all his spark, and he's just trying to be a defensive coordinator that, you know, has extra responsibilities now.
Yeah, some guys can coach an offense or defense, but when they're the head coach and they have to handle the whole staff and kind of oversee both sides of the ball, they're not quite the same.
That's what it sounds like to me. Tell you though, someone who definitely has everything running really well is the Packers. They have Don Capers, who, again, that was a valid point about some coaches not being good in the head coach's position, but when it comes to coordinating a specific style of ball, they do a great job. Look at Dom Capers. How many people remember that he was one of the first two coaches to take, he and Tom Coughlin took Jacksonville and Carolina to the playoffs faster than any expansion team ever in the history of the NFL.
And exactly, and Dom Capers is the coach that brought a team to the Super Bowl faster than anybody else.
That is a good point to make. And the thing is, Packers, Mike McCarthy, they ask him, did he think that they could go 16-0? So, we can win every game. I think that before every game. He is extremely organized, and he seems to have the right game plan for every team on the Packers' schedule. So, I'm kind of believing the Packers could potentially run the table. They only have one roadblock. And if you guys remember the last 3 to 4 seasons, the season always seems to come down to something important to the Packers and Chicago game, and that's coming up. Granted that we have Marion Barber, who needs to go and get a cut now. You can put that on the back, or call him the Marion Barber Shop, because that's going to be his next job if he messes up again. But the thing is this. The Packers are built to win it all. On defense, special teams, now, it's, I understand Jennings is out and all that, but they withstood six major injuries last year and still won it all. So they're the team to beat. They sure as hell put the beat down on Oakland. I think Oakland, I think Oakland was kind of believing that they were the convicts for sure, but they had dropped the soap and they were catching it because the Packers were packing it in. That's for sure. I just lay it out like that. Great game.
I did notice that as soon as Jennings went down, not long after that, Jordy Nelson got banged up. He eventually came back, but as soon as he got hurt, all of a sudden, it was fairly early into the game, and they pulled Rodgers. I noticed they maybe said, hey, look, you know what, we got this game under control, we've got everything wrapped up. I think they're going to go undefeated, unless they have an off day, and they decide, you know what, we're behind. It's more important to have a healthy quarterback than to go undefeated. Their schedule, I think the Lions are the only team that could give them some competition. That's the last day of the season. Again, if the Packers don't want to play all their guys all the way, you know, Lions could win that game, but I think they got a little bit of a scare with the injuries on Sunday. That's his number one receiver. Now they still have guys that can, you know, pick up the slack with Nelson, Jermichael Finley, even Driver's been pretty good.
Even though he's 60
years old. One thing everyone's forgetting about with the Packers is you had one person show up this week that hasn't shown up all season long, and that's Ryan Grant. If the Packers can get a – they haven't had a running game all season long. Between Starks and Grant, they haven't done anything. Now, if you got a running game, if Grant is actually starting to play and starting to run the ball and goes good, and the Packers have a running game to complement the pass, everybody is in trouble. But, you know, what Ken said about the Lions game, that is one thing that makes me very nervous, because as crazy and as off the wall as Ndamukong Suh is he just going to sit there and say, screw it, I'm out to kill Rodgers, and that's it. I don't care if we win the game or lose the game or I get suspended for the entire playoffs, I'm going to kill Rodgers. Because he will be back then.
I think he's back this week.
He is back. He was just reinstated. And here's the thing, though. If you notice number 52 for the Oakland Raiders, he came in and they said he drove Matt Flynn to the turf. I don't think it was that bad. I mean, really? Can we please take the pantyhose off the quarterbacks, okay? Really. Tebow's the only guy that gives punishment. He's not the only guy, but he's giving punishment out. And quarterbacks, and I'm so sorry that I even mentioned Tebow, because everyone's mentioning it. It's a really good thing there's not a Tebow drinking game every time his name is called, because the whole country would be drunk. Even if you don't play football, you can't escape his name coming up. That's the thing. But, yeah, and then that's the thing. They have to beware of injuries. Of course, don't do it a la Colts. That was the dumbest thing I've ever seen when the Colts packed it in, when they could have gone 16-0. And I, to be quite honest, once Caldwell did that, I don't think he ever had that team again. That was stupid.
No,
but, that aside, though, speaking of running the table, can the Jets run the table?
What's their schedule?
We got the Eagles, the Giants. I have to look up the list, because Eagles, Giants. For some reason, I'm thinking Dolphins, but I have to look that up.
Well, the Giants game is going to be a tough one, because that's a home and home game. That's, you know, both teams play in the Meadowlands Stadium, and the Giants game. That I don't care what the records are for either team, that is a statement game. It's like Ohio State, Michigan. It's a game you just don't want to lose because of bragging rights. I don't care if you go 1-15 and your only win is against the Giants or the Jets, it's still considered a successful season because you didn't lose to the other team. Last game is Miami. They could definitely beat Miami.
Philadelphia, Giants, Miami, at Miami.
So there's one
team. They'll go 2-1.
Okay, so we'll see. I don't know if they can run the table. We'll see, because it's always something. Sanchez could revert back to playing as if Joe Namath is still playing these days. Let's face it. Joe Namath, the way he's on Twitter and everything else, he acts as if he's still playing. And he's not, because if he were, he would play like Sanchez does on Sanchez's bad days. If you notice that in New York, there was Rex Grossman. There was good growth. There was good Rex and bad Rex. Now they start saying good Mark, bad Mark. It's too inconsistent. So we'll see what's going to happen. So it's a consensus that they probably have one game they really need to focus on, and that is to try and beat the G-Men.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned the whole Sanchez thing, and, you know, he is one of those quarterbacks that does absolutely nothing but gets all the credit. Even the week, what was it, 2 weeks ago, he had 4 touchdown passes. But he threw for like 127 yards. You know, he got credit for it, but he only threw, you know, 4-yard touchdown passes. It's anybody can do that. I could bring my 4-year-old nephew out and put him on the field into a Jets uniform, and he could throw a 4-yard touchdown pass. It's not that difficult.
Right. He actually ran for 2 and 3 for 2, but they were saying how he had 4 touchdowns, the first quarterback, and however. They always come up with these stupid-ass stats. I'm sick of that. Can they come up with a stat to say how many donuts a team consumed before practice one day? They have everything else.
Or how many beers the Red Sox drink in the clubhouse in the fifth inning?
How many buckets of chicken? Now, that's a stat that everybody would love.
That's the set that I would pay attention to. You know, we should. This is what we have to do. For once baseball season comes up, we need a dreaded sports talk Red Sox drinking game.
Absolutely.
We, you know, I'm not a Red. None of us are Red Sox fans, but we have to come up with a Red Sox drinking game just because it would be hysterical.
We have to.
And
add,
to watch
like,
a Red Sox game, you almost have to be drunk.
I'm actually going to be trying to get. They put their spring training tickets on sale this Saturday. And the week we're down there, the Twins are actually at their new little mini Fenway. I'm going to try and get tickets for that this Saturday. It's called JetBlue Park. It's like a little 11,000-seat replica of Fenway. Green Monster, seats on top of the Green Monster, the whole thing.
Wow, does it fly off any place then?
It looks like, if you see the outside, it looks like a spaceship. It doesn't look like Fenway from the outside, but from the inside it does.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it's JetBlue Park, should it be a blue monster?
Yeah. And the ironic part is it's built on the grounds of the old airport in Fort Myers.
Wow, I'd be aware of that. Well, you know, we're reaching that part of the show, though. I know we have some other things to talk about first, but we have those picks coming up, and I haven't really paid attention to how you guys have done, because I've done, the captain has just, it's just been horrible. It's like I've had too many bottles of rum instead of cups of rum and lost it when it came to, but I tell you this week, I'm going to be right on, so get ready for that. I'm going to tell you somebody who was right on in the state of Texas, he might as well go for governor, and that's T.J. Yates, the way that rookie took the team down the field and scored. I could see it on Twitter, on every possible social media venue. People were saying, oh, no, the Texans, they're going to blow it. Now Yates is their quarterback. Next thing you know, I knew that Yates was good. I told you. No, you didn't. You didn't even know he was on the team. You probably, T.J. Yates, you probably thought he was a team attorney. But, yeah, to Yates, he looked pretty good. The thing that really blew my mind was how calm he looked the entire time. He never once fidgeted with looking for his plays on his wrist or anything else. He played like he'd been there before. So I think Houston's in good hands. In fact, Schaub, who they were yelling about two seasons in a row, I think he still would have played pretty good here because you know how the NFL is. It stands for not for long. So that's what my Jerry Glanville said years ago. So the Yates look pretty good, and then looks like the Titans are looking like they're in great hands with Jake Locker. Do you guys see how he effortlessly just took over? Like, okay, yes, my job. But I think they would be much better off with Locker as a quarterback because he's much more mobile, and he doesn't seem to be afraid of anything as opposed to Hasselbeck. Okay, I'm just saying, because Hasselbeck, when he left Seattle, they gladly let him go. I mean, really? They decided to use Tavares Jackson just to prove to him, dude, we're not missing you at all.
Yes, they are.
Look, Pete Carroll's
the
coach.
The one thing with Locker is he was great. He had a hell of a game until the last play. He just choked on that last play, couldn't get the ball off, couldn't find anything, ran. When he scrambled, he ran right into the linebackers. It was just like it was a design play to screw up.
Instead of throwing the ball away and having another couple seconds left, he just ran, dove, and the clock ran out. He just ducked under, let them fall on top, and that was it.
Yeah,
but that's
a
rookie mistake. You know, you got to give the kid credit. He did bring the team back. He did have a chance to win the game. It was because of him they had a chance to win that last play.
And
it was a rookie mistake.
He did it without Arian Foster because he had probably, in fact, I know for a fact because he was on my team, that was the worst game he's had since he came back from his injury week 4.
I knew you were going to have it. You can be for sure that on this program, that Evil's going to bring up the Dallas Cowboys, that I'm definitely going to bring up Tebow or Chicago Bears, and that without a doubt, Arian Foster's name will get called by trusty first mate Ken, because obviously he's gotten you a lot of fantasy points.
Him and Mr. Jones Drew.
And And there's one thing that we're forgetting about this whole Tennessee conversation. Not to change the subject on you there, Captain, but the resurgence and the rebirth of Chris Johnson. Welcome back to the NFL, Mr. Johnson.
Well, I'll give him his due there. I mean, obviously he's got fresh legs, too. And plus, with all that money he had to run to the bank, he had to take a few trips. So now he's not carrying money to the bank. It's all safely there. He had to have that extra weight. He can run.
Exactly. He's going to be the scariest back if the Titans make the playoffs. He's going to be the scariest back out there because he is the freshest of them all.
Yes,
yeah,
he is.
He had no training camp. He had to go through that grueling month and a half of work. He used the regular season as his training camp. I guess if he was in camp and came in shape, they might have had a few more wins. They might not have been fighting for the playoff spot, but he's... It looks like he's back to where he was.
Could be. But here's someone, if Eli, not back, but where he belongs, I mean, are people finally going to shut up and give Eli his due? That's the thing. And do you think that he should finally get his due?
No, I do not.
Oh, boy. Let's hear this one.
Eli is still Eli. You know what? Yes, he's a great four-quarter quarterback. And every week they throw out the stats of how great he does in the fourth quarter. Well, you know what? In three out of the last 5 weeks, he had a turnover that cost the Giants the game on the last drive in the fourth quarter. Yeah, he has great stats up until the last drive. If the game is on the line on that drive, he can't do it. If there's a minute left or 2 minutes left, yeah, he's phenomenal. But if there's 20 seconds left and he has to score to win, he chokes. Plain and simple. He's playing great. He has the passing yards. The reason why he has passing yards is the running game is horrible. His offensive line is horrible. He did get the quick release this year because he had to. He had to learn how to release that ball in seconds as opposed to minutes. But he's still throwing off his back foot. He's still making the same errors that he throwing into coverages that he shouldn't be throwing into. I mean, what was it, the second or third play of the game, he threw an out pattern to Victor Cruz, and it should have been a pick six right there, but whoever, I think it was Donald Lee, just dropped the ball. It hit him in the perfect spot, the hands, for him not to catch it.
Well, I'm
other than that, if what's that?
No, I'm just going to say, though, you did make a valid point, and Ken, you might agree on this one, and that is Eli in the past did look as if he had a Thursday night football game, and they told him it was Monday just so his pass would arrive on time. It seemed like.
Yeah. Eli holds the ball way too long. You know, that was not to float Kurt Warner's boat, but that was his biggest thing, is he knew the timing of his receivers. He knew how quick every one of his receivers were, and that's why he was so good for such a long period of time.
He did get lucky. That one play where he scrambled forward, he stepped up into the pocket, and he was being grabbed from the right side, and he shifted the ball to his left hand and tried to flip a little left-handed pass that just, like,
oh,
fluttered.
That was just...
those are the kind of things he's done in the past, and they were lucky that there was nobody there to take that. That was just, like, he just, like, floated it. Right, and not even off to the side. He floated right up the middle of the field into traffic.
Yeah. Yeah, on that left-handed shovel pass you were talking about, and he actually ended up hitting the defender's shoulder that was trying to block it.
Yeah.
So, it's, you know, there are certain things that he's gotten lucky. You know, he got, no offense to Eli, you know, he did win the Giants Super Bowl. But come on, that pass to David Tyree, that was a close-your-eyes Hail Mary. That was like, oh, my God, I'm going to get hit. Oh, I'm safe. I'm going to get hit again. Let me get rid of it. And he just launched the ball. You know, if it wasn't for that pass, he wouldn't even be in a conversation with anybody right now.
Well, partly he's in the conversation because he put himself there by proclaiming this summer that he was in the same elite status as Brady. And from what I can see, he is, because Coughlin's yelling at him the same way Brady, his offensive coordinator, was shouting. But, yeah, that was so out of character.
Well, he didn't say he was in the same elite status. He said he was in the same league as Tom Brady. And he's absolutely correct. They both play in the NFL.
That is true, because so is Joe Webb.
Exactly.
And so is Caleb Haney. So that piece. That being said, though, moving right along, we have to talk about Brady and his offensive coordinator. That was bizarre. And I just agree with a lot of talking heads in the sports arena who they're pretty much saying, and I believe this, Brady, he's a little bit on edge because the defense is so bad, he knows he has to score. He forced that ball in. I believe him when he says that he made a mistake, because more and more I watch that play, he was trying to get that ball in there because he absolutely wanted another touchdown. He knew he had to score, and it turns out they did, because Rex Grossman put in a respectable game. And even the interception that Rex Grossman threw in the end wasn't his fault. I watched it over and over again, and I said, wow, I have to cut Rex a little slack this week. And I couldn't believe it, because
Wait, hold on. Did I just hear you correctly?
Yeah, that's the whole point.
Can you repeat that just so we can hear it again?
I have to cut Rex Grossman some slack, because he put the ball in there right where it needed to go. They had a great opportunity to beat the Patriots, and because his receiver on this end, this particular day, decided not to wrap the ball up and to actually catch it when it was put. The only place it could go for the receiver to catch it, he messed up. But again, though, thing about Brady, he has no choice but to go out and score as many points as possible. He's having to work so hard on the football team. He was also frustrated because not only can he not score when he needs to at the end of the game, he can't score at home either because he's too tired from trying to score in the stadium. So, yeah.
Yeah, Giselle is sitting there going, oh, come on, Tom, you can do it.
Yeah, so I just believe that this week...
I'm not a wide receiver, I'm a tight end.
Overall, though, I just think that this week, and you know how Bill Belichick is, I believe that if Tim Tebow doesn't get Belichicked this week, we're all in trouble. You might as well just give him the damn trophy, okay? That's if somehow Tebow beats Brady and his boys this week, we're all in trouble. All in trouble. Because there would be no explaining on this earth, even with a bad defense, because even though they're bad, they still get in their positions they're supposed to be in. They just can't do the job. They're not athletically inclined to do so. And then you put that together with a defense that knows how to play defense, which is Denver's. I'm thinking Brady, the way he usually comes back from a situation like that, he makes a statement, a strong one. And Belichick, he's probably saying, fuck Tebow, okay? I'm not worried about it. If he's going to be praying, he's going to be praying his ass makes it off the field. That's how Belichick thinks. And this is the week to find out what's really going on. So I expect Brady and his offensive coordinator, and of course, and don't forget Spygate. I threw that in there because this is what happens in the league. If a situation happens and people forget about it, like all of those players who got in the trouble, been in jail and everything else, you act like nothing happened, and there's Michael Vick, you dog. Don't let me go there. Do you get my point? So, Belichick, this is the week, even though you were responsible for one of the biggest scandals in recent memory in the NFL, this is your week to show us what you really got. People call you a genius. They call you the greatest coach and all this other stuff. Let's see what you got, because I'm going to tell you right now, if you let Tim Tebow win this game and all of a sudden all the churches in America are filled up again, it's your fault, Belichick. So let's see what you got this week. Speaking of what they have, did you guys hear that the Saints allegedly had an illegal whistle on their sideline?
No, I didn't hear about this.
Yes, and it's on tape. It's on tape. And what happened was, during the game, their opponent kept saying they heard an illegal whistle. They heard a whistle, and it was coming from the same sideline, and they had a film crew there to record the game for one of their shows, the weekly shows. And he was there, and yes, it is on tape. And I thought the thing that was a telling of it all was when they decided to talk to the public relations or public affairs for the Saints, and they just simply said no comment. Of course not. But I'm just wondering, would that not have affected the Saints also to hear an extra whistle? I'm just saying. I don't know.
Now, see, instead of saying no comment, they should have blown a whistle.
Yeah.
That would have been funny.
Real funny. Like, what's not funny are the fact the Eagles, they are not dream team. They're just dreaming. Okay? I don't know what happened to the Eagles this year exactly, but they're definitely not the dream team. They are not, all right? The Phillies were the dream team. They were not. The 70s, no, let's not talk about them. But do you guys have anything in short? I was going to mention the 76ers, but no. They weren't any good since the 80s, the 90s and the 80s when Charles Barkley was there, so we won't even bring them into the conversation. Although, yeah, that's all I have to say. I don't even want to talk about the let's not say the acronym of the league that's playing right now or thinks they're going to play, because I don't care. You know what I'm talking about, the one with the guys wearing the little shorts, and they stopped smoking pot now at least, but it used to be the gangster league, and they throw this round ball into this cylinder that has nets under the bottom. Yeah, we won't talk about them at all.
Oh, you're talking about the CDL.
Absolutely. So the Eagles, though, what went wrong? Let's, in short, because we have time for a promo and then on to our picks for this week, but in short, let's start with, if you can, what happened to the Eagles this year?
They upgraded positions, but not the defense. The defense has been pretty weak. DeSean Jackson deciding not to play this year because he wants his contract hurt the offense, and with that combined with Macklin being out, really hurt the passing game. But the big thing was the defense and the offensive line. The offensive line was just awful. They didn't make any upgrades to it, and just think, well, let's hope it works, and it didn't. LeSean McCoy's been the only bright spot for the team.
He's a hell of a runner. I'll give him that. Really is. That's a good observation. And Evil, I know you probably have a nice keen observation as well.
Well, I blame a lot of it on the whole thing is basically, in my point, two things. The reason why the Eagles didn't upgrade their offensive line is because they believed in Michael Vick. Michael Vick last year was playing for a contract. This year, he's playing for Michael Vick. And you know what happens when he plays with Michael Vick. He just goes out and, I'm not even going to get into that whole thing. But yeah, I'm not going to get into that. But, you know, he had no reason to play anymore. So he didn't care. He wasn't the same player, nearly the same player, that they thought they signed for a long-term deal last year. The second thing that they did was when they upgraded their defense, they completely forgot about the biggest part of a defense. And no, I'm not saying the defensive line. It's the linebacking core. The linebacking core is huge for multiple reasons. One, they rush the passer. They're the extra rushers on the blitz. Two, they can drop back into pass coverage. You know, they do everything. They're the only position in the field that does everything. You know, you can get away with having poor corners and poor safeties if you have an incredible linebacking core. And they just ignored that. So those two things combined, lack of offense, lack of a line, or lack of a quarterback, lack of a linebacking core, Eagles, bye-bye.
Well, I want to break it down on the captain's terms, and to me this makes the most sense. Would you both agree that Vic is taking a hell of a lot of hits?
Yes.
All right, well, there's a reason for that.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Everyone does know this. When you get a huge contract, you're supposed to buy your offensive line some Rolexes, take him out for steak, or do something. He did nothing for his offensive line. So I think that they're just saying, oh, not going to give me a watch. Watch this. So
I heard he got all pit bulls.
Yeah, that's right. So that's my non-football reason for that occurring is that Michael Vick, I see some elements of the old Michael Vick creeping in. And I had a chance to see a lot of this while in the Atlanta area. I will tell you, though, I wouldn't be surprised, and I hope it doesn't happen just for the sake of a comeback story and all of that, but Tony Dungy needs to spend some time with that boy and get him straightened out because I see some things that we really shouldn't be seeing. And I'd say some things that we should be seeing, much better picks, and we'll be back with our picks right after this.
You're listening to Dreaded Sports Talk on the Dreaded Sports Talk Network. Network.
Now, that's what happened. It was not that the Saints had – it wasn't that the Saints had a whistle on the sideline. That was merely the young Rebel Goombas getting ready. They were tuning up to do sing-along. That's all it was. That's where that whistle came from.
Oh, no. Yeah, so you had to stop playing the Goombas because I was just starting to, like, dance and sing along myself. I was all getting into it, man. Come on.
Well,
you can't see doing the Goombas like that.
Yeah, I know. But I tell you one thing, Atlanta and the Jaguars, it's a game that I really don't really care about. Here we are now starting the games that are on Saturday and Thursday, and I don't really see a good game at all on Thursday. But nonetheless, we have to pick the winner. And I'm going to come right out and say I'm picking the Falcons to beat the Jaguars, the Jags, the Jagos.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Atlanta, too. Although I'm rooting for Jones-Drew. It's championship week.
That's Ken's fantasy. Winning another championship.
Yeah, I got Jones-Drew in my big league, too. And, you know, I'm rooting for Jones-Drew enough to sit there and say that this team looks different since Del Rio's been gone. I don't know what it is. But the last 2 weeks, it's like the last four halves they played great for three of them. Unfortunately, the one that they didn't play great in cost them the game. I'm going with Jacksonville.
All righty. They don't call him a loner for nothing because he's alone on that one. Dallas and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Buccaneers. I'm choosing the Cowgirls.
Yeah, as much as I don't want to, and I'm rooting for Tampa. They've just gone in the tank the last couple of weeks, so got to go Dallas.
Yeah, I look at it like this. The Cowboys played the Giants just as good as the Packers did the week before. The Giants are a good team. The Cowboys are a good team. The Packers are a good team. The Buccaneers are on their way downhill. Got to go with the Cowboys. Go figure. Me, go with the Cowboys. What a shock.
The Buccaneers, they're disgraced to all Pirates. That's for sure.
You can't even call them a pirate.
Really, that's for sure. That knife that they have between their teeth, they should cut their tongues out saying that they're a football team. I don't know. But the Dolphins and the Bills, right off the bat, I'm kicking the Bills.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Bills also.
I'm going with the Bills, and I never thought I would say this in my life because Matt Moore is hurt.
Yeah, I mean,
I never thought
anomaly.
That would be a deciding factor in my game plan of picking, but when Matt Moore goes down, you know, you can't pick the Dolphins.
Well, that's the funny thing that you say that. You're saying that because Matt Moore went down. The fact that you have to say that because it went down, that also explains why there's no snow in Chicago hardly yet either. I mean, so because Evil Rob has to pick the Bills because Matt Moore went down for the Dolphins. Jeez, wow, that's like an anomaly for certain. Matt Moore, I remember I almost wanted to pull back some sound bites from the beginning of the season because we all know that's bad. That's bad when you're depending on Matt Moore.
Exactly, that's my point.
See, Seahawks and the Bears. I'm taking the Bears. They're pissed off, and too bad for Seattle. They started putting everything together at the end. Then their quarterback, Tavares Jackson, knows what it's like to run. And far from the Bears, he'll be doing the same thing he did in Minnesota. So I just say the Bears' defense, they're pissed off. They're going to make an example out of the Seahawks this week.
I'm going to go with Seattle.
I'm going with the Bears because I think Marion Barber is going to bounce back and do what he's supposed to do. Hold on to the ball and keep it in bounds. But this just in, Tiki Barber is trying out for the Cowboys.
Really? I mean, really?
Yes.
Oh, Lord. Oh, my goodness. That just stops the presses for sure. I don't even know what to say to that except, Tiki. Yeah, because the Marco Mario went down, and yeah, all right. But we might, if we have a second at the end of this, we might revisit the Tiki Barber scenario at the end, perhaps we have the time. Ken, so what's your say on the Hawks and the Bears?
I'm taking the Seahawks.
Uh-oh.
I like Marshawn Lynch. They're playing pretty good. I'm not really convinced that Tavares Jackson is a good quarterback, but without Forte and Cutler, I don't think the Bears can move the ball.
Well, here's the deal. They're playing in Chicago, and there is going to be snow this weekend, so that's why I'm picking them for certain. The Panthers and the Texans? No, before I even go into this, you might see the Panthers lose the rest of their games the rest of the season. Let me tell you why. Are you guys familiar with the fact that Cam Newton, he's still going to have great stats, okay? But did you notice that he opened up his mouth and ruined it all by saying that his teammates needed to come up to his level?
No, I did not hear that.
I didn't hear that either.
He did. And you see what happened? Did you happen to see either one of those interceptions?
No.
It's okay.
Yeah, I saw a couple of them.
Cam Newton just screwed up. You do not. Even if you are a veteran, you don't do that. If you're a rookie and you're making a lot of money, you definitely don't do that, especially in your first year playing for...
You don't call out your teammates publicly. I don't care when it is. You don't call out your teammates publicly. You do that in the locker room.
Come up to my level just because he's 6'6". Really? Come on, Cam. Really? So for that reason, I think that the Panthers are going to let him get sacked a couple of times. They're going to let him see, okay, yeah, we're not on your level, so we're not worthy of blocking for you. So I'm picking the Texans.
Yeah, I'm taking the Texans.
I'm going with the Texans as well, just because they're looking too good. They're an all-around team, and that's what it takes to win this league.
I'll give that. Yes, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I just want to hear trusty first man Ken say one again. Now, who's their running back? What's his name?
Oh, Arian Foster. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. you didn't say it enough this week, man. I think because you've mentioned him so much, people have checked out his stats because you've been one of the star supporters. I'm being very serious here. I think a lot of people just wanted to hear that name again. I think he should hire you as his PR rep.
Did I mention Drew Brees?
Yeah, I got a call from Roger Goodell, and they said that the highest rated page on the NFL.com website was Arian Foster's stats page.
I don't even know why we need to pick this game, but we will. The Indianapolis Colts and the Titans. I say that, once again, Peyton Manning, MVP. Anyway, Titans, there's no way they're going to lose this game.
Titans.
It's not going to happen.
Tennessee for me.
Yeah, man.
Well, the deciding factor for me is in Indianapolis. The Colts are amazing at home. They amazingly lose every time they play at home. It's going to go with Titans.
That's a good point of view. And first of all, I know there's no one on this ship who's crazy enough to pick the Chiefs over the Packers. So do you, is that okay if I just go ahead and pin in all of us with the Packers?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought so. Yeah.
There ain't enough room in the world to make you pick the Chiefs.
Yeah, I left all the idiots over at Key West Show, you know, the ones that, never mind. The ones, I'm talking about the ones on Sunday night and whatnot. We don't do stupid things like that over here. Yes, I said it. Yeah. In case you're listening, Gweco. All right, so New Orleans Saints and the Minnesota Vikings. Here's the vibe. The Vikings, similar to a pirate, but they have to watch out for the extra whistles. I'm picking the Saints.
The Saints.
Drew Brees is just too much. They got too many receivers. Got to go with the Saints.
And what's the name of the quarterback, Ken?
Drew Brees. Going against the second worst defense, points-wise, in the NFL.
The Washington Redskins versus the New York Giants, which is one of the premier matchups throughout the history of the NFC East. I'm picking the Redskins.
I'm going to go with the Giants.
Captain, you just upset me right there. I'm going with the Giants. The Redskins won the opening day against the Giants. That put a bad taste in the mouth. Giants are playing really strong. Their passing game is on point right now. Got to go with the Giants.
I had to pick the Redskins because Rex Grossman was a quarterback for the Bears, and looking at his cycles, okay, he's good for at least two games in a row. He hasn't had two games in a row, and this is going to be it. So this is the one. Bengals-Rams, I'm picking the Bengals.
Bengals.
I don't even have anything to say. Bengals.
Good, because the Bengals, Rams. Ram it. Okay. The Oakland Raiders are hosting the Detroit Lions. And Dominican Sue will return to play the team that he should be a member of. Lions here. That's my pick.
Lions.
Detroit's defense is too strong. Carson Palmer's too weak. Got to go with the Lions.
Makes sense to me. And why do we have to pick this next game? Because it's on the schedule. The Browns and the Cardinals. And Pat Shurmur, bless his soul, I guess he wished he was still back in the front office of Seattle about this time. Why do you take someone out of the front office and put him on field as a head coach? I don't know. But the Browns, they're like, really, they're brown piles right now. I'm picking the Cardinals.
Cardinals.
Cardinals are coming off a big win against the 49ers. The Browns, you know, Colt McCoy is still going to have his head in the clouds from that hit by Jerome Harrison. Got to go Cardinals.
I'm going to save this next game and come back. No, let's just go and knock it out now. Patriots versus the Broncos. I have learned do not bet against Tim Tebow, and I will not. I know Belichick, his team, they play discipline, and one thing you don't see, the last time, and I did a little research, the last time a Patriot went out of bounds and he wasn't supposed to, that was in the year 2000. Really.
In the year 2000.
Well, of course, then again, the fact that Belichick in that year, that was during Spygate, he probably already knew how many inches he had left before he got to the sideline for the game and put some type of device that said, steer away about this time. Yeah. I don't know. That was a long stretch of that whole thing I just said, but the point is the Patriots don't make those kind of mistakes. They do fumble, though. They absolutely do fumble. But I cannot bet against the Broncos at home in an opportunity where everyone's betting against. I can't find too many people. In fact, the line is 6 points, which is ridiculous. In fact, if I come up with some money, I am going to bet on the game. There's no way in hell. 6 points. No way. That's no. Not going to happen because the Broncos are not going to lose by more than 6 points even. That's not even a touchdown. It's going to be a low scoring affair, people. So I picked the Broncos.
I'm going with the Patriots.
I'm going with the Patriots too, and this is the reason why. Tom Brady, I said this earlier, I'll say it again. Tom Brady, Wes Welker, and Gronkowski are together right now. They're drinking a beer at some bar in Boston saying, you know what? We are going to make a point. We know we can't have this game close. It cannot be a 10-12 battle. We can't be up by 10 points at the end of the game because Tebow will come back. We got to score 45 points in the first half and put this team out of their misery. They're going to go nuts, and I'm picking the Patriots in a blowout.
Okay. You heard it here. Right here on Dreaded Sports Talk. Jets and Eagles. I am picking the Eagles.
I'm going to go with the Jets.
Wow. I agree with Ken. I'm going with the Jets. They're hot. The Eagles are a one-and-done team. They win one, lose two or three, win one, lose two or three, and they won one last week, so they're going to lose two or three. Jets.
All right. I picked the Eagles because I saw some things out of their defensive schemes last week that would tell me that perhaps they have enough going on to make it a miserable day for Sanchez. I think he's going to play like Joe Namath would today. That's just my point. Chargers and Ravens. I picked the Chargers.
I'm going with the Ravens.
I'm sorry, but I'm not, absolutely am not, picking the friggin' Chargers to beat the Ravens. I just want to see if I get any reaction out of that one.
I was questioning him. I was looking. I was sitting there thinking, I've had a few rums, but I'm sitting there thinking, wait a minute, did I hear that correctly? And then you corrected yourself. Okay, good.
I mean, I would take the Chargers
if
Arian Foster was on the team, but if other than that, no, I'm going with the
And they could have had Drew Brees.
Yeah, because if the Chargers had Drew Brees and Arian Foster, you know, I'd go with the Chargers too.
But any team coached by Norv Turner, I'm sorry, I want to see Norv Turner lose. I want him to go back to being an offensive coordinator someplace, Chicago. Anyway, so, Rob, how are you going to roll on, how are you going to rule on this particular one?
What's that?
So you picked the Chargers.
No, I'm going against the Chargers. I don't care who they're playing. I'm going against the Chargers this week.
I tried to get you, but it didn't work. Oh, well.
So, Ravens all the way.
Now, Monday night is an intriguing game for certain. All right? We have the Steelers versus the 49ers. The 49ers have nothing to play for. Nothing. Except the fact that they're just good. They want to show people they're still good. And knowing Jim Harbaugh, he would run the score up on a team of nuns. So my point is, the 49ers are going to play hard the whole game. My question with Pouncey and also Roethlisberger having high ankle sprains, what's going to happen with the Steelers? But the thing is this, I cannot bet against the Steelers because here we go again. The Steelers are one of those blue-collar teams that you cannot count out. And this last time I checked, it's time for their yearly push at the end of the year. So I'm picking the Steelers.
Yeah, I'm going Pittsburgh also.
I just think that the injuries, Jerome Harrison is out this week. The injuries to Roethlisberger is just going to be too much. He's not going to be effective. 49ers.
Okay, and just as we get ready to go into our final thoughts, I just want to question one thing. Where did Hines Ward go? I'll tell you, I know where he went. He went to Dancing with the Stars, and the very first day back, instead of running patterns, he decided to do a foxtrot. So they set his ass on the bench. Hines, what are you doing? What the hell? Those aren't pads. What? Is that makeup? That's not black eye. Oh, my God. Sit down, Himes. That's what happened.
Yeah, he's created his shoulder pads for maxi pads.
Yeah.
Oh, that was definitely a good one. But just that being said, you guys did a fabulous, fabulous job running on the show. That's why the ship is always so. Let me tell you guys something right now. It doesn't matter whether the captain's not on the ship. 1-2-Z doesn't matter if Ken's not on the ship, and doesn't matter if Rob is not on the ship. Doesn't matter. We have things in control. We have it. We have it on autopilot, people. So thanks for listening to Dreaded Sports Talk, because we've been on for over a year. We have different co-hosts, special ones. Like next week, we have Gary Phillips coming on. We hope. No, actually, no, that's coming up in January. We have
Jimmy Pappas.
Yes, Jimmy Pappas. He's going to tell you about watermelons and things like that during the show. But thanks for listening, everyone.
Well,
and as we end,
Jimmy
Pappas is going to
come on next week. Awesome.
Yep, absolutely. Yes, that is the facts. You never know what will happen here on Dreaded Sports Talk, which is joining up with Ship to Shore Radio and will be part of the premium sports package that you'll hear on Ship to Shore Radio. Thanks for listening. And I want you to listen to our final thoughts. And we're going to start with the evil one. What do you want to throw down on people, man?
I'm just looking forward to the last few weeks of the football season. You know, everyone's concentrating right now, like Ken and I, on the fantasy situation because it's, you know, playoff time and everything else. But there's a lot more going on. There's some serious playoff races. There's teams that you wouldn't even think are involved, like Cincinnati and Tennessee, that are there because they deserve to be there. They're playing great. They're having good seasons. And they're surprises. And, you know, keep an eye on these teams because watch these teams. If you got the NFL package on DirecTV, watch them. Don't just tune into Red Zone. Watch these teams because they are playing great. It's good football to watch all around right now, and this is the best part of the year for football. So enjoy the next 3 weeks.
And we will. Ken, what's on your mind?
Football, too. Like Rob said, for us, this is our final week. Our championship round for fantasy. We got the playoffs coming up, the bowl season. Even though there's too many bowl games, if they're all on my sheet, we have to pick them. So it's a fun couple weeks. Bowl week coming up on, you know, after Christmas, there's like a million games on during the week. This way I get control of the TV. I don't have to watch Lifetime.
And there's no Yankees on.
No. And hopefully I'll be in a good mood Saturday because I got my spring training tickets.
All righty then. It is the holiday season. We'll also perhaps do a short segment for the holidays. We will see. And as we end up this week's episode, I just want to tell everyone, I'm sick and tired, really. This isn't a rant, but something that I have to say. Three names are on my mind. Jerry Sandusky, Bobby Dodd, and Bernie Fine. These are just three coaches who have absolutely shattered any parent's confidence in their kids being left alone with coaches or persons of authority and anything to do with sports. And as these three names, I won't go too far into it. I'll give you the three names again. Jerry Sandusky, Bobby Dodd, Bernie Fine. There are a bunch of those such individuals out there, but those are the three that are most in the news. And hear what I said now. There's going to be probably a much larger name individual from the sporting world who comes out of this in the end. And unfortunately, we don't really know what happened, but we're all intelligent people. We all know what happened. Why do we have to hide behind term limits and statutes of limitations and things like that? The fact is, things have been untoward for a long time, and I'm glad they're getting a handle on it. Yes, during this holiday season, make sure you hug your children and keep them away from such losers as the ones I mentioned. Catch you guys next week. Thanks for listening to Dreaded Sports Talk with Captain Frank and Dread and Evil Rob, and as always, my right-hand man, trusty first meet Ken from Jersey. Thanks, everyone. Have a good night and happy holidays. Yes! Peace!
Ship to Shore Radio. Ship to Shore Radio. Ship to Shore Radio. Ship to Shore Radio. Ship to Shore Radio.
Thank you.
You're listening to Ship to Shore Radio with Captain Frank and Dredd.
Are we here? Can you guys hear me?
Thanks for listening to Dredded Sports Talk on the Dredded Sports Talk Network.
See palm trees and coconuts, get the sand.